we're trying to brainwash Mike, right?
I don't know anymore. I mean, yes.
Go away, I'm on the air. Well, not really. I'm on the recorder. Does that make sense?
I don't know. I just like when you ramble.
Did I just call people?
I guess you did. People are being called.
Oh my God, I can't believe I did that. Well, hey, guess what? That pickety guy you talked about sure has made a bunch of noise. But you know the problem with him is he's French.
A lot of riders have gone gunning for him, you know?
Yes. Well, and economists are like that. Which is kind of funny because in a lot of ways it's almost a pseudoscience.
Totally a pseudoscience.
Yeah, you know, it's terrible.
Okay. What are we talking about? I'm not following.
Economics generally, but...
It's not just economics. They say Freudian psychology and even Marxism, maybe. A pseudoscience is something that sounds scientific, but it can't be proved false.
Okay, but what are you calling that? What are we referring to?
Economics.
All right, okay.
You know, it's terrible.
But if you're wrong, you disappear. But if you're right, all of a sudden all this money goes to you. But almost everybody that's right is only right for a percentage of time. And so then they'll tell you.
You know, it's terrible.
Well, he, you know, increased earnings by 8.9% from November 2011 to July of 2013, but they don't tell you about what happened before and after, you know, because really it's going back to the Molodnov thing, and that there's a lot of randomness.
Was Molodnov, was he the guy who thought everything worked in 80-year cycles? One of those crazy Russian guys?
No, was he? I don't think so.
I don't know who you were talking about.
The guy that wrote Drunkard's Walk?
Oh, okay, yeah.
I don't remember anything about 80-year cycles. That was some guy you were trying to brainwash Mike into believing in, right?
I don't know anymore. Yes. I mean, yes.
Right? Didn't you talk to me about that, Mike?
What was that?
The 80-year cycles. Everything broke down into 80-year cycles as far as growth and shrinking.
No, that wasn't me.
You sure?
When I was talking about Dougal's book, it was the 80-20.
Oh, that's right.
You're mixing up your thing.
80s. Now, the 80-20s, that's named after a guy, right? Don't they reference a guy, Dougal?
Yeah, he's actually a really famous economist named Vilfredo Pareto. Pareto, yeah.
Pareto.
And he used tons of his math now, but he was a real, he was a nut. Appointed to the Italian Senate by Mussolini. Like, he was adored by fascists.
Oh, and yeah, probably because...
But nobody mentions that. Like, that's the funny thing, is that it's one of these things where you're using what is basically fascist economics. And it's snuck in. It's being taught in every business school. The fascist economics. It's being taught in every business school.
It's not surprising at all.
I guess not all,
because Marx is not fascist. But I mean, like the Straussians and those guys, you know who I'm talking about. They seem
They're crazy. They're cults. They're all cults. Mike, have you found any other movies for masses?
Well, this week it was The Wild Bunch. Yeah, it went over well, and I was actually surprised how many people didn't really know it. Yeah, it was kind of, I got a few people probably though rented it at some point, you know, but a lot of them I was surprised didn't really know it.
Did a lot of people stay to the end?
Now, nobody, you know, I've given up the idea that anybody's seriously watching the movie.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they didn't come to masses to watch television, you know.
At Sunday's mornings, there's nothing on television, so...
So it's the same difference, but, you know, I'll throw something interesting up there. Maybe it'll catch their eye at certain points. And that's always kind of interesting because I'm not watching it myself. I've got my back to the screen. And it's curious when, you know, when the conversations will die down and it appears that they are watching it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, you know, extreme scenes of violence to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, the media has figured all this out already.
Uh-huh. So I'm just there to catch any sort of good commentary, you know.
Would you ever do any Tarantino?
It would probably go over well there, and I couldn't stomach seeing that.
Really? Even Reservoir Dogs? Because that's my favorite of Tarantino's movies.
Yeah, I guess that's my favorite, too. But then, you know, I also read that thing was pretty much plagiarized from beginning to end, too. So.
From what?
From what?
From Chinese movies and different things.
Of course. City on Fire.
Okay. Is that the name of the movie?
Hey, that's Corey.
I never saw, you know, the one he ripped off.
Hey, Mike. But,
what about John Waters?
Actually, you know, I got
hey,
a surprise.
Flamingos?
We started talking about Looney Tunes. I might even start showing some Bugs Bunny
there
down there.
There you go. They're shorter.
That might be interesting to see how that goes over.
I like it.
Mike, that's funny you mentioned the thing. Did you ever notice how I grew up, like, they were everywhere. Like, they were still on Saturday mornings. But have you ever noticed how sometimes later on in the best show, in, like, its last year or so, I know it happened at least once in my imagination. Maybe it happened more than once, or maybe that is my imagination. But, like, Tom will reference Bugs Bunny to somebody who's, like, younger, and they'll be like, I don't know what that means. Like, not like, but they don't know, like, the plot points of some of the most famous of those movies, or the shorts, you know?
Yeah, well, I think they're harder to see now, right? I mean,
you have to seek them out now. You're not just, like, that's not just what's on TV on Saturday mornings, or, you know?
That's why my brother got the all the DVD box sets for my niece and nephew. And
oh, okay.
My brother started showing them, and they enjoyed them. You know, they still thought they were pretty good, and they'd use some of the phrases from them every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely good.
They hold up.
Yeah. So it's just that it's not being, kids aren't seeing it. Like, it's not.
I'm not seeking out cartoons on television much anymore.
What a shrewd move, like, old television did in general. The way they just, like, play old movies all the time. It's, like, just free content that already existed, and they just run it endlessly.
Well, the PC, that's what classic rock is.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't have to pay. They already own the catalog.
Beatles never seemed to have any problem getting new kids to be interested.
I did read a Leonard Pitts article where he was talking with a kid, and the kid was talking about the music that he liked, and they were agreeing, and he said, "This is not right." But the reality is, what is on the radio is so processed, and the teenagers can recognize how phony and false it is, and people are looking for authenticity, so they go back to the older stuff, where you could actually hear an artist's voice. And now everything has been run through so many, what are they called?
Oh, it's like Main Street type music, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's just no comparison. Plus, I also think that older music, rock and roll music, has a real advantage, is that it's already been, it's like water filtering through rocks. All the impurities have been drawn out, so what you hear really is usually the better of the music from that era. It's been filtered.
Yeah, my mom's like of the baby boomer age, and I ask her once in a while, like, if there were any, like, you know, it's not uncommon, I mean, for, like, a kid who's 13 or whatever to get into music from the 60s, and it hasn't been for some time now, you know. And, like, I'd ask my parents, like, when you were kids, like, were there ever any weirdos who would be into, like, music of their parents' generation, you know?
Right, like listening to some swing jazz.
Yeah, or, like, Rudy Valley or something like that. And she's maybe there was one weirdo, you know what I mean?
Well, if you were a music fan, and I think I'm booted going backwards, you know, checking out, like, Hank Williams and, you know, Johnny Cash and all that stuff from the 50s and earlier.
You're right. And I went to the blues roots, but, yeah, I went back and found You know, like the Robert Johnson albums and Muddy Waters.
Yeah.
Because I like Johnny Winter, and then I went back to Muddy Waters, and then Muddy Waters brings you to Howlin' Wolf, brings you to Junior Wells.
Yeah, I mean, if you're kind of seriously a music fan, that's what you'll do. I mean, you know, but I think a lot of people are just kind of like, they like the music maybe when they were in high school.
And that kind of stays with them, stick with what they were into in high school.
High school and college.
I have concluded that that is just like that imprinting, like talked about birds, and they'll just glom onto something. But yeah, and that was the music that came in during their window of openness, and it's probably like from 13 to 21 or something.
Right. Yeah.
And then. Yes, and those are the people that will spend $150 to see Black Sabbath, you know, rather than see a new band that's writing music that's, you know, influenced by Sabbath, but advanced, but they don't want to hear that. They want to hear what they heard back then.
Yeah. Like, and like you said, you not only find new music that's, you know, probably better than seeing 70-year-old men go, you know, looking for a paycheck for stuff they did 40 years ago, you find music that, you know, you could go to those shows for a fraction of the cost, you know? It's like, absolutely. You know what I mean? Like a band on an indie label. Right.
So anyway, so you did talk to Tom. You told me, but not the other folks here, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I spoke to him on the phone. He was, he's basically sort of has to reassess. He's possibly even thinking of a different location because he doesn't want to do a show where he's going to be under the constant threat that there's somebody that's going to break into it, you know?
Yeah.
And apparently the cops were well aware of some guy who they know was probably the most likely candidate for doing it, you know? Apparently he just got out of jail and he's back in the neighborhood. Kind of sucks that, you know, that was the situation. But he's going to look into possibly doing it someplace else. He may even reach out to people for, like, a location that they think might be workable. It was a setback overall, though.
I think Cormod offered his basement.
I mean, you know, I was thinking of offering Mass's basement, but it's kind of jam-packed, you know. It would require quite a transformation to make it presentable.
But it could be done.
It could be done, but...
Well, doesn't have to be video. I don't think, like, Mark Maron's garage is real fancy.
No. But it is a business of people are going back and forth to get beer and so on down there.
Well, yeah, I could hear Tom go, Mike, can't you close that door? Although, actually, I think that would be fantastic, quite frankly. Tom probably wouldn't go for it.
I guess, again, we were talking about old music. A couple of my friends... Leonard Skinner playing at the Stone Pony of all places. They have an outdoor stage at the Stone Pony now. So, you know, if there's somebody playing on that stage, you can just hang out up on the boardwalk. You're going to hear the music. Now, I was thinking of doing that, but I never got my ass in gear. Now I'm looking at the schedule. I'm thinking I might go see the Drive-By Truckers are playing.
I don't own any of their records, but I'll be damned if not just about every time I hear one of their songs, I like it.
I sort of think they're like, they lost something when they lost Jason Isbell.
Yeah, I heard about that.
When he was with them, I thought they were at their peak.
Okay, but you think once Isbell left, it hurt them? Seriously.
Yeah, and actually he's got a pretty good career going now himself solo, you know? So, I mean, I guess it was a good thing for him to go out on his own, you know? But when he was there, I those were the records I kind of liked the most.
Right. If I was going to just buy one, what would you recommend?
That's a good question. Hold on.
All right.
I've been going to see shows. kind of were the stuff I listened to when I was in high school, you know? And it's, I mean, those shows are always like, holy shit, this is just like a bunch of old dudes.
You know, I think you might like the Dirty South.
That's the name of the record?
Yeah.
All right, got it.
That's got some good songs on there.
The Waco Brothers?
Yeah, no, I like the Wacos, of course, yeah. I mean, they're spinoffs from the Mekons.
Yeah.
I like all the Mekon spinoffs.
Seen them like three times.
Yeah, they're good.
Your drummer is a sweetheart.
Actually, I sort of, me and another guy, we kind of crashed it was a private party. We went to, we saw the Waco Brothers like earlier in the day. They were part of the CMJ thing in New York.
Uh-huh.
And they played at Brownies, I think. And then we like, I don't know, we got into like a conversation with one of the guys in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, we're playing this place later on, you know? And I guess this guy didn't realize that it was like a private party. He kind of invited us to go to this thing. And it turned out to be like a wedding reception thing.
Oh man!
It was a small little place, and we just kind of went in with the crowd. It wasn't like they were filtering people out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were hanging.
Oh crap!
Oops, Frederick. I'm sorry, buddy.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Corey got me.
I think we were drinking for free. That was the big. That's why we were so guilty.
So how was the performance?
Oh, it's good. They're always fun. You know, I mean, you know, I've talked about it before. They're just like a fun group of people. And if I get a chance to see them in any of their configurations, I'll go see them.
In Orlando, they were doing an art presentation.
Yeah, he does art. I don't think I've ever seen John Langford's solo group. You know, they were playing at the Bell House, and I was thinking about going. And
is that the Pine Valley Cosmonauts?
No, that's Pine Valley Cosmonauts is pretty much the Waco Brothers with maybe a slight variation. You know. I think it's like one or two guys different. You know, that's
about it. And
there's
Skull Orchard.
Yeah, Skull Orchard, yeah.
Three Johns?
Three Johns, it doesn't exist, three of that. I've got one of their records.
Yeah, it just seemed like he was trying to make it impossible to keep up with him.
Yeah, he's always moving.
Mm-hmm. Boy, he's so fun in concert, too.
Yeah.
And then, like, when they take a break, rather than going backstage, they come out and grab a beer and hang around with the audience. That's why I got to talk with them and stuff.
Yeah, where did you see him?
Skipper's Smokehouse.
Yeah. That sounds like a fun place.
Oh, you love Skipper's.
Yeah.
If you ever find your way down, you don't even have to bring any shrimp.
What town is that in?
Tampa.
Tampa, okay.
North Tampa. Holy crap, here's a bunch of people. Although, are they calling me? I gotta be careful.
I'm hearing chomping.
What are you eating? No, there's too many people here. This is 18 people that want to join our call. I can't do that.
I know.
That's fucking wild. That guy's definitely not in the driver's seat of whatever it is he's doing. And fuck.
Yeah. Well, let me, before we leave the topic of shows of an extraordinary length, I saw Prince in 1986 at Madison Square Garden. And then after that, that concert ended at 11:30, played 3.5 hours. Then at 1 o'clock, I saw him play at Roseland till 6 a.m.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. He played until 6 a.m., so that was a 5-hour set.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Elvis Costello at the Shabu Inn, 1978.
I got hit with a beer bottle in the back at that show.
I was standing on a table hanging from the pipes.
I thought about Elvis before when you were talking about the art. Record art that was supposed to deteriorate, because he said have you ever seen Armed Forces the way it came out in England?
Mm-mm.
It folded out like a million different ways. it's pretty neat. I mean, I guess the American record company were like, fuck you, no way. You know, like, we're not... But that record, he said that about, he was like, it was kind of made to deteriorate. Every time you opened it, you would have to unfold it four or five different ways, and those folds eventually would kind of give out.
Right.
So he kind of wanted parts of it to, or, you know, his art director or whatever wanted it to fall apart.
Right.
Sounds like somebody's walking away.
Mike must have seen some Long Dead shows. Is Mike gone?
I'm here.
Oh, he's gotten. He's in that way quiet part.
He's on the pallet. He's got to sit up.
Oh, all right. I'm in the sweat box now.
Every Dead show seemed pretty long, you know, that I ever saw. I
mean, yeah, they were all pretty long. They all, you know, like 3 hours. I mean, but they had intermission, you know. Where I was going between 77, and I guess it wasn't very long that I was going to the show, from 77 to about 78. I don't think I was even going to see him in 79. Because I lost interest when Go to Heaven came out, you know. And Brent Midland joined the band, you know. I just heard that as like they were going to move to the middle of the road or something. It just, I was not interested at that point anymore.
But I have to investigate that you said, you've talked about that, you did talk about that before. And I mean, they were never a hard rock act in the...
No, they never were. They weren't.
So for them to move to the... So you mean they were more, not kind of slowing down in tempo or whatever, but moving more toward like a soft rock sound, maybe?
Yeah, just listen to any Brent Midland song.
And they're more produced too, Mike, and the arrangements are tighter. And
yeah, it's like Michael McDonald territory.
Well, they had always had this kind of loose sort of shambling, even on their studio records. It never got too tidy.
No, I know. I told you. I love that. Those two albums, and everybody every Dead person seems to agree. Are those?
And what's the deal with Anthem for the Sun, Mike? Is that consistent?
No, I don't really like that record.
Okay.
I mean, you know, that was sort of cobbled together from live shows. You know.
Oh, okay.
But some people like it. You know, there are parts of it that are good, I guess, but. I don't know. It was never a big... I was never a big fan of it.
Well, and do you agree that their Robert Hunter era really was their most consistent as far as songwriting and stuff?
Well, I don't think he ever really left them, you know? I think he was there to the end, you know? He was still writing songs with Garcia. You know, I just don't think the songs were any good after a certain point,
yeah.
You know?
They just came together at a good time. He was at a peak, and they were...
Yeah, I mean, they had their run, and then it sort of went into decline, like most bands, you know?
Right.
I mean, most bands, it's hard to sustain something for long periods of time, you know? But, yeah, he was part of the run.
Mike, how's that Europe 72 album? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, that's
double album, maybe.
Yeah,
and I had half of that. I had 1 8-track of it.
And now, you can get the whole Europe 72.
Yeah, right.
The whole tour.
Yeah, right.
72 CDs, right, Mike?
No, it's like 300.
Oh my God, that's insane.
You can't fit a Dead show on one CD.
I think it may be like 72 shows. So yeah, well, times some of them are 4 CDs, some are 3.
So that, but the official release is okay or no?
It's good. And actually, I mean, if you just want to like the tip of it, you know, they put out a second sort of a sequel called Europe 72 Part 2 or something. I don't know.
So do you listen to it like people listen to jazz guys? They want to hear how they approach the solo each time?
Yeah, that's how you listen to the Dead.
It's like listening to jazz.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they talk about different eras and, you know, different tours. And, you know, they would play certain songs on some tours and then they wouldn't play them on other tours. So, yeah, I mean, you sort of...
Withholding groovy stuff.
But there's a certain fatigue sets in, too. I mean, you know, I know this guy who literally, he listens to the Grateful Dead every day. I mean, I can't do that. You know, that to me is kind of borderline craziness.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, he's been listening to the Grateful Dead every day for like years.
Is he a heavy pot smoker? Or?
I think he indulges once in a while. He's not. He's
okay,
not,
so not that, real.
He's not anti. But he just went kind of crazy with that with them. And I kind of, you know, I've gotten to know him over the years, you know, because I sort of met him through, I actually met him through, this goes all the way back to the Kevin Smith board. You know, I met him through
when
that.
When you invented internet trolling.
when I was in my trolling phase, he was also kind of trolling on that board too. And so I would encourage him, you know, because he would just write these little short snippet stories about, what did he call him? The gunslinger or something. He ignored everything else that was going on the board, and he would post these little stories about the father and the wife and the child. And it was just so bizarre. And it would drive the Kevin Smith fans nuts. They're like, what are you doing here? You know, why are you posting this shit here? You know, they would jump all over him. And I was like one of the few people that encouraged them, you know, because I thought they were really funny.
So, Mike, how much of that that spindle did you listen to? Only a couple shows, or?
Yeah, until I got to the part where, I thought Tom should listen to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I only listened to, like, two or three shows. That's from an April show. So, yeah, I think the spindle's still sitting there collecting dust. I haven't made much of a dent into it. Tom Mike, still has my my one disc. I got to get that back from him.
Yeah. Mike,
it's incomplete without that disc.
Right, yeah, exactly, as if there's not enough of it otherwise. Is there truth? I read on, I think just on Wikipedia, so I don't know how accurate it is, but this was something I thought was kind of neat, like, about the way the Dead did their live shows. Is there any truth that they would go, it's Sugar Magnolia, right? That song, right? From American Beauty. And you know how it ends, and it's like, do-do-do, sunshine, daydream, right? Like, there's, like, a little coda at the end of it?
Yeah.
I read that they would, like, play the song sometimes and withhold the coda, and then, like, a few shows later, like, burst into that part. I thought that was a pretty awesome idea.
I didn't know they'd withhold it for a couple shows. Maybe they did that in the 80s, but... You know, I've got shows where, they would go on
gimmicky with it by then.
Well, yeah, maybe it was just becoming a gimmick. Yeah, when would they play the last part of Sugar Magnolia, which is not one of my favorite songs. Certain songs, they just wear you out, you know. And that's most of the Bob Weir songs kind of wear me out, you know.
So that's Weir singing that one.
Yeah, that's a Bob Weir song. So. And their most played song, because, you know, in the early days, you know, Bob Weir, you know, they had to, like, you know, he wasn't as talented as Garcia. So they would have to, like, sort of make concessions to him. And they always had to play, like, Me and My Uncle, which, you know, is sort of a fine song. But, you know, that's the number of all the Grateful Dead songs played. That's the song they played the most.
Me and My Uncle?
Me and My Uncle.
I don't remember that song. Well, his best song is playing in the band, though, right?
Yeah, that was his big. And, you know, even that one, you know, yeah, lots of people like the way they would jam on that. I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm not such a huge fan of that so much. It's good. It had its moments.
Well, that was called Ace, right? His solo album?
Yeah,
and that really was supposed to complete the trilogy.
Yeah, that's essentially a Grateful Dead album. I mean, they're all on there.
Yeah. Well, I remember that when I was working at the gas station.
Yeah, and even like Garcia's solo record, they came out around the same time, and like 70, 71 in there.
I'm glad we're talking about the Dead. I'll get more hits for this one.
Why is that a popular topic?
Yeah, when you check Frederick's Mind thing, it'll bring you there, and then it was the episode, and then it was like... It was the one where Mike doubts Frederick's dead cred or whatever, and then I said, "What is different about this one?" And so, I put Grateful Dead in the tags. Yeah, and it's got like 30 more hits than the other episode.
That's so weird. So like some
put Grateful Dead in the tags every week.
Yeah, I love that.
They're out there. They're out there.
Did I told you about when I saw Peter Rowan, right, with the deadhead at the urinal? Or did I not tell you this?
I don't think you did, no.
Yeah, because I told you I saw Peter Rowan recently, right?
Oh, really? No.
Yeah, with Yun Chin Lasso, a Tibetan singer, Himalayan Tibetan singer. Yeah. Anyways, yes, I saw them at the Palladium. Oh, what a show. Anyways, but then he did, for one of his later songs, he did Panama Red.
Yeah.
And I'm in the bathroom, going to the bathroom, and this hippie comes up next to me, and he says, "That's a Jerry song, right?" I said, "Well, Peter wrote it." He goes, "Yeah, but it's a Jerry song." I said, "I know that the new writers of the Purple Sage did." And Jerry played pedal steel on it. He goes, "See, I told you, it's a Jerry song." I said, okay, you know, and holding in the way, but that's what it was. And to him, that was all that mattered. I think that's all he cared about for the whole show.
Did you like that record?
Which one?
Holding in the Way?
Yeah, I got two of their records, actually. Yeah, that's fun stuff. But yeah, and I've got the High Lonesome Sound one as well, which is a little bit more traditional, and the playing is a little bit tighter. But yeah, and Vassar's a Florida boy, and I actually saw them minus Jerry Garcia a couple of times, but with David Grisman and Vassar Clemens, and I think Herb Peterson played banjo. And I forget, it wasn't John Kahn on bass, but it was somebody. See, I do know my stuff.
Yeah, you do.
But yeah, and yes, it was very good. Magnolia Fest, as a matter of fact, was one of them. And there was always some Dead-related stuff. That's when I saw Tom Constantine and stuff, too. And Merle Sanders. I saw the Rainforest Band. All that stuff.
All right, fellas, I'm going to wrap it up.
Well, thank you for talking about the Dead, Mike. I really do appreciate that.
I hope I boost your ratings, Frederick.
Yeah, well, this is actually going to be part of my experiment. I got to see if this works.
All right.
I'll have to study the charts and graphs, and we'll work the demographics.
I'd like to read. What book should I read about the Dead?
What's that?
What book should I read about the Dead? What's the best one?
Well, actually, the best book I read is the Garcia biography.
I thought it was the Scully book, Rock Scully.
Well, I mean, that's entertaining.
That's the one I want to read.
that's entertaining, you know, if you just want to, like, some dirt and stuff.
Oh, okay.
But I think the Garcia biography by Blair Jackson is just a good book. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, he led a pretty interesting life, so, and he presents it very well. He's a good writer.
That's important.
Yeah, that is important, particularly with rock music books. Sometimes they're written so poorly you can't read them.
All right, fellas.
All right, Mike, have a good night. Have a good week.
Come on, guys.
Take care.
Good night, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye.